Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
sifter.com.au.
This Civ is a really big change to a lot of the formula, so at the same time, it still feels very much like a Civ game, and I think that it's one of those things where it's sort of, as you get into 7, if you think you don't like something when you read about it, I'd say give it a chance. And if you play it and you think you immediately understand it, give it a chance, because there's some, you know, we like to talk about how some of the stuff is going to be more impactful than it may seem at first. So I just say stick with it and give it a few more turns.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap, Sifter's video game interview podcast. My name is Gianni DiGiovanni. On this episode, recorded at Melbourne International Games Week, I'm going to give you an insight into the upcoming Civilization 7 with special guests Andrew Fredrickson, lead producer, and from the art team, Matthew Quickle, senior lead environment artist, and John Fitzgerald, unit lead. Before we get into that, let's find out what's been making the news this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly gaming news podcast. Hi, I'm Gianni DiGiovanni, and here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 3rd of November. Ubisoft fails to read the room at all and launches an NFT game in 2024. Concord developer Firewalk Studio will close and the game will shut down forever, Sony confirms. Nintendo launches its own soundtrack player, Nintendo Music, on phones. And Fortnite digs into the nostalgia of peak pandemic era with Chapter 2 Remix as it simplifies its battle passes. You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
My name's Andrew Fredrickson. I'm the lead producer on Civilization 7.
Okay, Civilization 7, for a series to get to 7 titles, not counting all the other spin-offs and things that you've had over the years, what sort of, I guess, pressure do you feel as a team to live up to this legacy of a beloved series?
I think it's, I don't know if I would say pressure. I mean, there's certainly an expectation and we want to meet that expectation. It's something the team takes really seriously to honor the tradition, but it's also, you know, hey, there's a lot of ground to cover. There's a lot of new ideas to explore. So it's exciting at the same time.
Now, you gave a speech this week at GCAP, and you were talking about how the way that you sort of structure your major updates between sequels. Can you tell me a little bit about how what you change, what you keep the same, and what you refine?
Yeah, so we, you know, the rule of thirds or the PIN principle, we got a few different names where it's like you want to have about a third of the stuff is proven. That's the stuff that sticks around. We keep it pretty much the same. We have a third of the stuff that's improved and change that in exciting new ways, but it still feels like an evolution, the next step, and then new things that maybe players weren't even anticipating. So when you go through from another major version, trying to figure out what's going to be what is part of the fun. And I think that there's certainly things that we debate and say, well, is changing this going to make it still feel like Civ or not like Civ? Or, you know, is it better or is it just different? So it's a lot of negotiation. And sometimes we go not far enough and sometimes we go too far. And then we, you know, a lot of iteration back and forth to find the sweet spot.
Do you look at it as an additive sort of process, or are you saying, okay, this particular thing just didn't work as well as it is, we can take that out and try something completely different?
It's more about not always being additive, but it's when we add something, are we going to add too much? Are we going to add complexity that's unnecessary? Do we need to take something away? So I think that, you know, obviously Civ is a complex game, and we do need to be careful that we don't just keep making it harder and harder and harder, because then, you know, existing players may get excited, but it's harder for new people to enter. And we always want to make sure new people can come in. And I think at the same time, when you do add additional complexity, it's an opportunity to look at the things and maybe say, that have they grown too complex, and break it down to something that gets the same level of fun without the necessary complexity or steps or whatever. One of the great examples we've already talked about is we don't have builders or workers anymore. Something that's been in every Civ up in some version or another. And, you know, it's like, well, the interesting choice here is what you put and where you put it and how you put it. The process of making the unit, moving it over here, then pressing, that was not, it was necessary steps to do the thing. It wasn't bad. It was just an extra process. And by taking that out, that that sort of mental workload, if you would, or that complexity can be used for something that's a little bit more interesting.
So how do you build roads, railroads, all of that sort of stuff now?
Yeah, they're all different. But, you know, our traders are, you know, merchants. You can send them to other towns, and they'll, as you build trade routes, they'll build the roads for you. Or when you build, you know, within your own civilization, if it's close enough, you just get a road automatically from one civ or one center to another.
One thing I was interested about is kind of thinking about the eras, how you've talked about a little bit in the past, where, you know, the civilization kind of goes through this age and then it changes. Tell me a little bit more about how that works.
Yeah, so in Civilization VI, we had when we added the Rise and Fall expansion, we really dialed up an era. They were already in the tech tree, but it didn't have quite the meaning. This is really the ages system that we've added in Civ VII is even further than that. And I think by adding that, it caused us to sort of introduce a lot of new challenges and a lot of new opportunities. And I guess it really just sort of shook the whole game to its core. While still being able to feel like a Civ game, gave us some new things to play with.
Who plays Civilization?
Hopefully everybody. we find, you know, it's actually was on our way across the trip coming out here to Australia. We kept running into people at the airport. One of my coworkers was wearing a Civilization shirt. People were like, oh, I love that game. And he's like, oh yeah, we work on it. And they started flocking to it. So all walks of life, all ages, all different groups. And it's great because some people will be like, I'm playing the latest one. Other people like, I tried them all, but Civ 3 was the one for me. And we're like, well, we start talking to them. And it's always surprising to who it could be, but it's never really a surprise anymore because it's, you know, it could be your grandma, your doctor, or, you know, any old person on the street.
Yeah, I've been playing for years. And one day I might even start a new save file potentially.
Keep it going. Just one more turn.
What are you most excited about in terms of other changes that you've brought into the series, and what are sort of things you're looking at in sort of the roadmap as the game comes out?
I think one of the things that I'm most excited about is the increased control that you have as a player over the combination of your identity as a, you know, not, I say Civ, but because we've broken Civs and leaders into a separate decision, we've added a few other features that you get to go as you go through and transition to the next age. You get to make the strategic choices of what legacy policies you bring forward. So it's a lot more combination, and which means a lot more control. You don't just make that decision at the beginning of, okay, I get this Civ, this leader, and I'm playing them through from antiquity all the way until the end of the game. You now get to make choices and build and evolve and change. And I think that seeing how that players get to play with that is just really exciting. I know I enjoy making a twist when I'm sitting there and testing it in my office right now.
Can you give me an example?
Obviously the certain examples are probably giving away too much content, but just having a Civ, we've revealed a few of them already. And, you know, there's the obvious historical combinations of like Hatshepsut leading Egypt. It's a great pairing. They work really well. You can see the synergies between their bonuses. But sometimes you're like, well, if I take, maybe I'll play Augustus and lead Egypt. And all of a sudden, I've got some bonuses that now I've got these units, but I've got this bonus, so I can use those units a little bit differently. And, you know, maybe my legionnaires, I don't have them, but now I can move the existing units across rivers better. So just those combinations are fun.
Does that come, I guess, as a compromise to the people who are like, I want to play you know, the Mayans and take them to the space age. Because, you know, there's almost like a bit of a role-playing aspect to it. I quite liked it when the Australian faction was in, obviously. But, you know, is that something you're thinking about? That by kind of having that mix and match, you maybe don't get as much of that sort of historical role-play? I know it's not real, obviously, but, you know, do you understand what I'm sort of getting at?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously a lot of people have asked about that, and, you know, that was something that was part of it, and we had a lot of conversations around what does it mean to transition, what do you need to keep, what can change, and I think that, you know, when you look at world history, civilizations did change over time, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of complexity and sensitive topics within that, and we try to navigate that and be very mindful, but it, you know, when we look at it, the gameplay experience is really the thing that players are going to enjoy, and we believe that as you go through and you get to that transition, it's going to make a lot of sense why you're selecting a new civilization, because these are points in times where those civilizations were you know, either a broader or more impactful or the height of their power or, you know, just a more true representation. But you still have that continuity. You're still, you know, we looked at what do people talk about? How do people identify opponents in themselves? Sure, you may sit down and say, I'm going to play as Egypt. But you say, I'm fighting, you know, Augustus, or I'm, you know, in an argument with Hatshepsut, or, you know, in the old games, Cleopatra. Like, when you have those quote-unquote enemies, or I guess opponents, being they're the same across the whole game. So I know that even though it transitions and it's not the same civ per se, it's the same group, it's the same leader that I'm against. And myself, obviously, I know my own continuity, I see my own cities, and I get to build the tradition based on, you know, historical options and my own gameplay. And I think that, you know, once players get their hands on it, they're going to see that it feels pretty good.
How did you get into game development?
Well, I actually began my career after college as a high school teacher. I taught English and I produced the school yearbook. And I did that for a brief period. It was really cool, but I had to go back to college because I only had a provisional license. I was like, this is neat, but I really enjoy the yearbook part because I like producing something. And, you know, as fun as that was, I'm not super passionate about yearbooks, but I am passionate about video games. So I said, let me go produce video games. And then I, you know, I moved across the country, slept on some couches till I got a job, and became a QA tester and worked my way, you know, up QA and then eventually over to production.
And what advice would you give to developers in Australia? Many of them are gathering here at the moment for Melbourne International Games Week, about the things that you've learned along the way.
Wow. We often joke, but it's a real thing. You know, game development is hard. You know, there's a lot of complexity, and I think the biggest thing I can say is just being open and honest with each other, but also yourself. I think it's very easy to get excited and attached to ideas, and whether that's your game idea or a feature or how you're going to make it. But you got to be honest and say, what are the real costs to doing this? And those costs can be financial. They can be time. They can be, well, it's going to put me into a corner where I'm not going to be able to do the other things that I want to do. So I think that, you know, taking a hard look and not being afraid to make some tough decisions along the way and, you know, own those decisions with the rest of your team and with yourself.
What is the biggest misconception around the Civilization series?
I don't know. I think that, you know, if anything, maybe a misconception is just around, you know, how easy or hard things are. But that's less about Civ. That's more about just game development, you know. A lot of people seem to think stuff might be easier than it really turns out to be. Well, I think it's really interesting. I think that the Civ community, we you know, obviously we've got a community team, we've got all our developers, we're watching what people are saying, and it's remarkable how often their guesses are right or close, and many times they're way afield. So it's kind of more of an excitement than any sort of like people are just getting something wrong, because as much as they may get wrong, they're secretly getting something right.
Andrew, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Obviously. Thank you very much for coming out here.
My name is John Fitzgerald, and I am the unit lead for Civilization VII.
Hi, I'm Matt Quickle, and senior lead environment artist on Civ VII.
So I have played a lot of Civilization games since the PlayStation version of Civilization II, and the game sort of looks like it's gone through many different evolutions over the time, and I'm just wondering, what, when it comes to a game like this, what can you do to change it without making it too different for players who are like looking at the world and reading the space.
Yeah, our art director, Jason Johnson, came up with this concept of readable realism. And we wanted to make sure that the world is readable at a distance and a lot of information can be conveyed, but also realistic in the sense of, the cities, the buildings, the units, and the world has that sense of weight to it, and it has a bit more gravitas, and it gives you that tone of historical events, and your actions have a little bit more weight to them.
Yeah, I mean, Firaxis as a whole, they had this idea that each civilization could switch around art directors from project to project. It was an opportunity for the studio to allow other folks to dabble in art direction that maybe hadn't done that before. And it also was a way to keep the game like feeling and looking fresh from title to title. And as John had mentioned for this one, Jason, who had done some art direction on the end of Civ 6 and then came over to be the art director on 7, and just pitched this idea of like miniature dioramas, and we were like, yes, that's awesome. We wanted to bring that sort of level of grit and detail that you see in real dioramas to this game, and give it a sense of like you could pick everything in the game up and like hold it in your hands. And so that's where the idea came from.
Well, it's interesting to me because obviously, you know, the earlier games, there was a level of abstraction, right? You kind of had to sort of imagine the armies, and then you got more sort of advanced things. And, you know, these units would just be like, boop, across it, bumping into each other, and then you'd find out if you won or lost. So tell me about, I guess, the balance between like adding, more of that detail, like the diorama style you're talking about, but also not changing, I guess, the feel of what that looks like.
Well, one of the big struggles of just making a game like Civ is how we handle like that level of detail. And we also wanted to provide that sort of like cultural diversity like we had never done before. And I just think that for us as artists, like it is our goal to like make the game as believable and as awesome as possible while still trying to maintain design goals. And so it's definitely a back and forth, you know, like there are moments where, you know, the art team put in for environment art, we put in like maybe too many buildings, or maybe they're, you know, the colors didn't quite work and we had to come back and change and evolve those things for better readability and to help with the design of the game. But ultimately, I think we came up with a really good compromise between both departments, so...
Yeah, Matt covers a lot of really great points. You mentioned units and combat, and that's really right up my alley. We really wanted to like embrace the gameplay there, and you know, as somebody who's made character art in many different games, you can make an amazing character model, but the times of most interest is when you are supporting the design of the game. So like. For Civ 7, we have, going to sleep and being on alert and everything. And when you go into those modes, the visual footprint of the unit completely changes, and it feels very satisfying. So every time that a unit changes around, it's for a gameplay reason. And it's very sort of, supports that gameplay.
Yeah, the art is in service of the gameplay.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things that we're most excited about is continuous combat. We wanted to make sure that, you know, the most exciting part of the unit experience is on the battlefield for the longest amount of time. So we allow the units to just warp right into combat, and we allow the combat to continue until the beginning of the next turn. So they kind of tidy up the battlefield when you hit next turn so that you can make your next strategic play.
I remember from when I was a child and playing Civilization 3, and I definitely got to a point where my computer in a late game just really struggled because things were just too complex. And I'm curious what you have to do when you're designing art that is prettier and more engaging and interesting and stuff like that to balance that sort of performance. Tell me about that tension.
So there's no doubt that... the game is not, I mean, there's just so much more in there. The level of detail is in there. We're doing, you know, a simultaneous release on all platforms. So, you know, you can't say, well, we'll fix it later, you know. So a lot of But we also have greater computing power than we've had in the past. So we had to like take a lot of that into consideration when building our work out. And I think there's like also like the content creation side and like how we handle and build those things. And now like the environment art team, we explored a lot of procedural tooling to help out with that, to create content faster. And we also looked at how we could, have a lot of reusability with kits and those kinds of things to make that process faster. But overall, I mean, we just have like a really strong engineering team that helps us to like get our optimizations where we need them to be. And like, if we need to figure out how we can, you know, prune areas of the map out or, you know, perhaps have a little bit more aggressive LODs like that. All of those things have come in service of helping the game to like run more efficiently on all platforms.
Can you tell me a little bit about the procedural tooling that you're using? Tell me a bit more about how that works.
Yeah. So in this product specifically, we utilize Houdini a lot more than we've ever have in the past. If you look at our mountains in the game, for example, they have a very different look than Civ 6. And in Civ 6, we relied on like a height terrains to do all of that work. All of our mountains were actually done with Houdini. We created like a process that basically had a graph and made rocks and we were able then to take that, and it did like 80% of the work for us, and then allowed like the artist to just do a little bit of sculpting and stuff on top of it to get it where it needed to be. But it also allowed for us to get really unique like rock structures and forms that we wouldn't have been able to get with a height map. If you look at our desert mountains, for example, like you can't do that with a height map. You have to actually have models to be able to do that. All of our foliage was like procedural as well. Like we used Houdini to make those. So if the art director came in and said, oh, hey, like I want all of the trees to have like, you know, be taller or, you know, have a different look to them, we could do that very easily because it was a procedural system. But what also helps is like if the engineering team comes back and says, you know what, we need to reduce some frames per second here. Like, how can we do that? We could go into each tree, you know, dial it down from like 10 branches down to 6. And now we've saved that geometry across the board for every tree that's in the game. And so those tools have been really helpful for us.
Can you tell me what will people see when they're playing the game? What are the sort of touchstones that you're looking for people to sort of see, experience? And then, you know, you're introducing a few new mechanics in this, and how does the art sort of serve that gameplay as you were talking about earlier?
Well, one of the biggest gameplay innovations is the introduction of ages. And from a character content creation aspect, we wanted to make sure that each age has a strong start, middle, and end. So we were able to flesh out the unit roster to do that. Each age has, you're given some units, and then you can upgrade some units from there, and you're unlocking new abilities. But then as you get to the end of that age, you've kind of gained mastery of your military tech unlocks and things, you have... brand new units, and it's a complete look too. It's not just one unit goes to the next one. It's trying to create like an entire army of information across the age. And I love that about the age system is it really allows us to focus our efforts and kind of curate that experience for you a bit more.
What are you most proud of?
Oh my gosh, how much time you got? For making this game, there has been an amazing jump forward in process and how we build things, but also the relationship between design, art, engineering. You know, we want to make a great product, a great game that we can all enjoy, and there have been some units that have brought the entire team together. And it's just a tremendous amount of work. But once we have that system online, then we can bring those findings to other units and build things a lot quicker. But the initial set of very difficult challenges, I'm proud of bringing those online and just doing things that the franchise has never seen before in terms of visuals. And I'm very, very proud of that.
No, pick your favorite child. Come on, go.
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, it's the It's probably the Cog, which is a early exploration age ship. It's like a medieval ship. But it has just a treasure trove of, animations, crews on the deck of the ship. Each crew member is a little turret figuring those things out, getting water, and the visual effects team has done an amazing job. When the ship sinks, there's little people like swimming in the water afterwards. It was just a real group effort, and I just love the way that unit turned out.
Yeah, I mean, to echo what John was saying, I think like Firaxis, like coming from Civ 6 to Civ 7, we have grown significantly in terms of like our ability to like mature in our processes and like how we work as a team and communicate across teams. And we developed some pipeline stuff that I'm particularly like, you know, proud of in terms of how we build, and like a material library, which is now shared across the entire team. So those types of things, like from the process standpoint, I'm really proud of. As far as the game, look, I love the age stuff as well. I love that we were able to sort of like have these buckets that we could work in, and we didn't have to think long, like the long play on like how everything that we made had to like fit into those like bigger pictures. And one of the things that I was very passionate about when I started on Civ 7 was I wanted cities to feel expansive. And I wanted, you know, everything to feel like it cohesively and organically came together. And I think we were able to do that pretty successfully here. And I'm proud of what we did with that as well. And bringing that like level of cultural diversity to each civ that you play as, like we haven't seen before.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that cultural diversity?
Yeah, sure. On Civ 6, for example, like just with our limited time and resources, if you were to put down a campus and you were going to play as any civ for the most part, you would get Greco-Roman architecture in that campus, right? Like that's what we could afford to do at the time. When we came into this one, we were very passionate that like every building that you place in the game for the most part is going to look like the civ that you're playing as. It was a huge undertaking for us. And, so now when you place down a library, you're going to get libraries, you know, from Egypt that's very different from Persia or any other civ, right? And so the payoff is great. Like you play and you feel like you're like immersed in that civ. So we've never done that before.
Does that make it more complex then if you're thinking about adding new civilizations down the track as you've done with previous games?
Absolutely.
What's the biggest misconception about, I guess when you see people talking about art teams and art direction when out in the world, what do people get wrong that they don't understand?
Making games is hard, you know, and the work that we do is hard. And I think the most common misconception is that players think that there are any ill intentions that like art teams or any developers have when it comes to making decisions. We love the work that we do. We're passionate about it. And we have our players like interest, like it's at the top. And so I would just say like, know that the developers are, if you have concerns, we probably have them too. And there's always just constraints that you have to work with when you're making a game. So.
How about you, John?
I absolutely echo everything Matt just said. the other thing is, you know, we have a unique challenge in front of us with a game like Civilization, in the sense that it's a top-down map game, you know, where you have this beautiful map, it's very expansive, and you're building these cities, and then a unit comes along and they're like 500 feet tall, and there's a lot of scale challenges there. So, you know, we're trying to make like a great cohesive world that takes you there, and we're also asking you, like, you know, suspend your disbelief so that we can look at this iconic, representational type of world as well, that's trying to convey so much information to you. I mean, we're trying to give you a continent's worth of information whenever you zoom out. So there are a lot of decisions that are made artistically to help, you know, kind of channel all of that info to the player in a meaningful way.
Anything else cool or interesting that you would like to add about the game that you think people might be interested to learn?
Oh, cool and interesting. Absolutely. There's so many different collaborations that have happened over the course of the game's development, collaborations between the historian, the art team, design team, and engineering team. There's many little victories along the way that, you know, kind of push the product forward in an amazing kind of evolution, a visual evolution. One example would be independent powers. You know, we wanted to make some advances in independent powers and how they work. It was very much so a design goal. And we were like, well, how many are there? And there's a lot. And it's like, well, how can we represent this? And it was one of those moments where we were like, well, what do we have? And how can we present this in the best light? And we were able to kind of pivot and bring a lot of unit visuals into independent powers to really help flesh them out and give them an identity, a cultural identity. So it was just one of those additions that it feels like an absolute slam dunk. And it looks and feels great.
Yeah, I mean, I would just continue to say that I think our developers, like, one thing I love for the outside world to know is just how passionate everybody is about making the content for our game. You know, we had a person on our team, I'll be mentioning this later, but it was just really passionate about India and, like, the work that we were going to do for that. You know, we were like, well, can we afford to do that and, you know, put that in the game? And he was like, oh, I'm going to go back to my desk. I'm going to come up with some ideas here for you. And then I'm going to present that to you later and how we can get it done. And I was like, cool. If you can come up with a plan, go for it, you know. And he was able to do that. And we were able to fit that into our schedule. But just like, I was just talking to our VFX artist about, you know, some of the wonder work that he was doing. And he was talking about meeting with, like, Aboriginals and, like, how all of that, you know, all of the passion that he had to work on the VFX for that particular wonder and stuff like that. So, you know, the people that are coming to work to do this, it's not just a game. They're, like, invested and passionate about that type of work that they're doing.
Hi, Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Star Wars Outlaws gives you a unique look at a galaxy far, far away, with a focus on the scheming, unforgiving criminal underworld.
I thought, when playing originally, that Nyx would have been sort of like something I'd use occasionally, but he became pretty integral to the gameplay. You're kind of always like looking at the angles and seeing, well, okay, what can I do over here? How can I cause a distraction? Do I want to set an explosion off over there to draw attention over there? Or do I want to use that explosive barrel to blow up a few enemies? So, you know, there's a quite an interesting variety in the way that you can approach each particular, which I found really fun. When it breaks bad, you're just like, all right, here we go. It's Star Wars time.
So does it deliver on its galactic size potential? Find out on Drop Rate, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
Civilization 7 is coming out on all platforms, PC and console, in February 2025, next year. This has been Lightmap Sifter's interview podcast. My name is Gianni Giovanni. Thanks so much for listening. Sifter is produced by Kyle Paletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Courtney Smith, and Adam Christou, and Chris Button. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and my name is Gianni Giovanni, and I'm Sifter's executive producer. Thanks to Audio Technica Australia and Apple for their support of Sifter. You can rate Lightmap and all of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or on Pocket Casts. Give it a 5-star rating, leave a review, tell everyone what you think about the show, and share it with your mates. It's a really good way to support us without costing you a single dime. That's it for this episode. Until next time, have fun.